Chapter 4. The History of UFOs. Part 3. In 1977 there was the Colares UFO incident in Brazil, and this is the amazing account of an island that was actually attacked by UFOs shooting harmful beams of radioactive light at the residents.
It is October 7, 1997. Retired Air Force Captain Nogueira de Halanda Lima is in his expensive home in Cabo Frias, Brazil. The former pilot and parachutist retired in 1992, but since then has struggled with illness. Radiation burns from beams of UFO. Antonio Petty, ufologist. Captain Halanda had been suffering a chronic depressive disorder since the early 1990s. In my personal view, this depressive process originated from something that he had experienced a long time ago in the Amazon. Later that night, his daughter climbs the steps to her father's room. She finds a shocking scene: her father is dead. He appears to have strangled himself. Was this a suicide brought on by mental illness or by something more sinister? Just 2 months earlier, the captain had given this exclusive interview to UFO researchers José Givard and Marco Petty. Both men study and document UFO incidents. This object went to Colares and then kept going as if it covered the Amazon in strips.
There was an intelligence doing this. 4 months into the operation, they ordered us to stop.
Some UFO experts maintain that Captain Olander did not kill himself but was murdered because he said too much about a series of frightening UFO encounters, some allegedly fatal, which took place in the Amazon jungle 20 years earlier. Carlos Mendez, journalist, he gave eyewitness testimony based on his work as a military man who committed one of the most serious operations in the world of ufology.
There is something very strange that the Air Force doesn't want revealed.
Pinon Frias, co-pilot, I don't believe it was suicide. Olander's death is connected to something beyond the normal.
He left a very clear message that we are being visited.
In 1977 we have the Malbouf incident in Canada. This occurred when Florida Malbouf, a 58-year-old woman, reported seeing a UFO and two extraterrestrials on the roof of the house in front of her home. The very next year we have the Emilson abduction in Poland. A man in Emilson, Poland is said to have been abducted by Greys. There is now a memorial at the site. 1978, Vlenich disappearance, Australia. An Australian pilot contacted air traffic control and reported sighting a UFO just before his aircraft vanished.
Melbourne, this is Delta Sierra Juliet. Is there any known traffic below 5,000?
Delta Sierra Juliet, no known traffic.
Delta Sierra Juliet, there seems to be a large aircraft below 5,000.
Just after halfway through his flight, Valentik had been in contact with a flight service center on the ground. Evidence mounted that something was not quite right. The following recreation is based on a transcript on Valentik's exchange with an air traffic controller.
There seems to be some sort of landing lights. As it gets closer, it could be one or two lights, I don't know. Melbourne, this is Delta Sierra Juliet. That aircraft just passed over me at least 1,000 feet above.
Roger, and it is a large aircraft. Confirm.
An unknown due to the speed at which it is traveling. Is there any Air Force craft in this vicinity? Air traffic controller, Delta Sierra Juliet, no known aircraft in the vicinity. Delta Sierra Juliet, it seems as though it's playing some sort of game up here. He's traveling over me at 2 to 3 times its speeds I cannot identify.
Can you describe the aircraft?
Delta Sierra Juliet, as it passes by, it's a long shape.
Stephen Roby, air traffic advisor.
He wasn't to the point where he was panicking, but he was genuinely concerned by what he saw. With what he saw, he was worried, and he sounded confused. And as he described what the aircraft was doing, now I became a little bit concerned too.
Now this thing's stationary. What I'm doing now is orbiting, and this thing is just orbiting on top of me. It's got a green light and it's sort of metallic, like it's shining all over. It's just disappeared. Melbourne, you wouldn't know what sort of aircraft I've got up here, would you? Is this some sort of military aircraft or what?
Delta Sierra Juliet, is the aircraft still with you?
Delta Sierra Juliet, now approaching from southwest. Delta Sierra Juliet, I am sitting on 2324, but this thing's just caught me.
Delta Sierra Juliet.
Melbourne, this strange aircraft is hovering on top of me again. It's hovering, and it's not an aircraft.
Suddenly an identifiable clicking noise came over the radio. The sound lasted 17 seconds, and then silence.
Delta Sierra Juliet, this is Melbourne.
It's hovering and it's not an aircraft. These were Valentica's final haunting words, which inevitably led to speculation that the young pilot encountered a UFO. However, it was nothing more than speculation until a witness came forward with a startling first-hand account. Around the time of Valentica's disappearance, the eyewitness and his family were returning from an afternoon outing when they noticed unusual activity in the sky. The unidentified man on the ground.
That's a plane.
The unidentified woman on the ground.
I can see the plane, it's the green light above the plane.
The witness has asked that we not reveal his identity. The unidentified man. I looked up, and I saw this long green light about 1,000 to 2,000 feet above the aircraft. So, we sat there and watched it for a few seconds, and the green light got closer to the plane and I said, that plane's coming down pretty steep about a 45-degree angle. I think it's going to crash. The eyewitness account appeared to support the theory that Valentik had a run-in with a UFO. However, the witness did not actually see the aircraft crash at the Bath Strait. The only certainty was that Valentik had vanished.
In 1978 we have the Kaikoura lights in New Zealand. Here a series of sightings was made by a freight plane that reported how the airplane was escorted by strange lights that changed color and size. In 1979 was Val Johnson incident in Minnesota. A deputy sheriff spotted a bright light which appeared to have collided with his patrol car and damaged it. The deputy also suffered temporary retinal damage from the light that came from the craft. In 1979 we had the Robert Taylor incident in Scotland. A forester, Bob Taylor, was pulled by two spiked globes towards a UFO, which stood on a clearing. He lost consciousness and afterwards had trouble walking and speaking. He also was constantly thirsty for several days and once again there was a strange odor.
Occasionally, there is physical evidence to back up reports of close encounters. On the morning of November, the 9th, 1979, forestry worker Bob Taylor walked down this woodland track, outside of Livingston Newtown near Edinburgh. He rounded a corner and was astonished to be confronted by an unearthly object.
A huge thing, with a big round dome, a very dark gray color, and had a big flange green all the way around. I could see arms sticking out of this flange and what I took to be blades on the top.
Later he described what he'd seen to a local newspaper artist who drew this sketch.
As I stood there, two balls came out here. I'd say they were about 3 feet in diameter with about six spikes and they were crawling on these spikes. They came right up beside me, and I remember feeling attacked, and at that time was the very first smell, a choking sort of smell, and that was it.
He crawled up this path and staggered home to be met on the doorstep by his bewildered wife. He looked terrible when he came in the door and he just stood at the door and I said, have you had an accident with your lorry? And he said, no, I've been attacked. Then I said, with what? And he said, a spaceship. And I said, oh, goodness me, there ain't no such thing as a spaceship, I'm going to phone the doctor. You must have fell and hurt your head. He looked quite shocked and he was drained, he was right white, and his face was dirty, and he had a red scar, here. His clothes were all dirty and his trousers, and then, he told me that his trousers had been torn. The police had been told and they discovered track marks at the scene of the incident.
Sergeant Work, when I examined the area I found two track marks and possibly 40 holes in the ground. These are the track marks here and these are the 40 holes. Since then I've photographed the holes. This is a photograph of the hole here. The holes measured approximately 4.5 inches. And this other photograph, you can actually see the tread marks correspond to the marks. These markings are tracks, actually inside this area here that's fenced off, and there's definitely no other tracks leading to or from this area. Detective Sergeant Sturck Stoff, these are the trousers worn by Mr. Taylor. As you can see, it is fairly heavy material. We have one there on the left, just below the pocket, and one on the right trouser leg, just below the pocket. These marks are consistent with the material having been pulled up while the trousers were being worn.
Well, I'm pretty certain that day I saw a spaceship sitting here.
Detective Sergeant Sturck Stoff, we must accept this story of Mr. Taylor. He is a very highly respected member of the community, a man of high integrity, and not one likely to invent such a story.
Then we have the 1979 in Manises UFO incident in Spain. Here it was reported that three large UFOs actually forced a commercial flight to make an emergency landing at Manises Airport in Spain. In the 1980s, we have the Hudson Valley UFO sightings in New York.
This is the account where a UFO flap was started during the 80s and continued for several years.
Overall, it involved thousands of reports of similar UFOs from a multitude of people.
Dennis said a husband and father of five has worked in local government for 17 years. He is currently the highest-ranking deputy in Putnam County. On March 17, 1983, Sant's home in Brewster was the site of an extraordinary event. Oh my gosh, come out here and see this. It was a very large object. The structure of it was a very dark gray metallic, almost girder kind of looking. What is it? I don't know, girls. Girls? Come out here and see this.
The object seemed to be very silent, the lights were iridescent, bright, they stood out in the sky in three dimensions.
It looked like a city of lights that just hung in the sky, all brilliant colors. At that time, the girls became very frightened and they ran inside the house. Then my son and I were just drawn underneath it. I felt very good about encountering a visual contact with the object. We followed the object around to the backyard, and at that moment a feeling of fright came upon me. Thoughts started to cloud my mind. Thoughts of the craft touching ground, thoughts of an encounter with an alien being, thoughts of being abducted.
All types of fearful thoughts started to enter into my mind, and it seemed only to be seconds before the object started to move again, but the feelings were overwhelming. From beginning to end, the 19 or 20 minutes that I viewed that craft was also a time of self-examination of myself and who I was.
Dennis Sant and his family were not the only ones mesmerized by the extraordinary light formation.
A few miles away, traffic screeched to a halt on Interstate 84 as a mysterious object hovered overhead.
The Hudson Valley sightings had only just begun.
Officer Andy Sadoff, I was sitting there looking at it and I wasn't afraid. I was just amazed. I was in awe of it. I didn't know what it was. Officer Andy Sadoff, a 10-year veteran of New Castell Police who is also an instructor of criminal child abuse procedures.
On March 24, 1 week after Dennis Sant's sighting, Officer Sadoff was working routine traffic patrol.
Officer Sadoff, I was working a 4 p.m. to midnight tour and assigned to set up some radar to look for speeding cars. I had the radar set up and I looked up into the sky and saw, coming from east to west, there was a series of lights, and at first, I thought it was a plane. It was quite a distance, quite far away, but it was really quite large. As I recall, there were mostly white lights, but there were green lights also. It was alternating green and white lights. It approached my vehicle, and as it approached my vehicle, it stopped, and it seemed to hover. There was no sound, and I'm looking at this thing and thinking, what is it? When I put my head out the window and I'm looking up at it, it was huge. The thing that I recalled the most, and that I was amazed that there was no noise. There was no humming, there was no engine, no low sound to it, it was absolutely silent.
Just seconds later, the eerie silence was broken. Another eyewitness report.
Can you please send someone else? I'm observing something incredible, from the police radio. Officer Sadoff, Unit 5 to base, I'm seeing it too. It's hovering above my car. It's heading toward town, I'm following it. About the time we started to transmit over the air was about the time it started moving again, and it moved very slowly. Almost floated, and we followed it. We followed it up until it disappeared off into the hills. I guess I was mostly curious as to what it could be. You know, excited to try and figure out, well, maybe it's this, or maybe it's a government thing, but I wasn't frightened of it, no. There really wasn't time to be frightened of it. I was spending most of my time trying to figure out why there was no noise coming out of this thing. Ed Burns, computer engineer. It was truly a flying city, if that's what you want to call it. I mean, it was huge.
Computer engineer Ed Burns is a retired senior manager for IBM.
At the time of the sightings, Burns handled the company contracts in Japan and South America.
On the night of March 24th, at virtually the same time Officer Sadoff was perusing the mysterious object, Ed Burns was driving home on the Taconic Parkway 10 miles north of Sadoff's location.
Ed Burns. Out of nowhere, I got a lot of static on the radio, and I thought maybe I was on the wrong number, and I went over to turn the dial again, and that's when I looked up and saw this craft. It was a triangular chevron ship, and the back of that chevron had to be as large as a football field at least. It was one solid piece off a chevron shape, and there was no noise. It seemed so close to the ground. It seemed like I could have thrown a rock at it, maybe.
Ed Burns pulled off the highway and joined a group of motorists by the side of the road.
All were gazing skyward, seemingly dumbstruck.
Ed Burns, it was so shocking, this one fellow that I was talking to never did answer me a bit. Isn't it incredible? Have you ever seen anything so huge? Ed Burns, they were just staring at this thing and I remember the size of his eyes were so huge and he never did answer me at all. It seemed like I'd talked for an hour, but it was probably only a minute, but I was so excited about it I wanted to share whatever I was feeling at the time. Where was it from? I'm not into astronomy. Mars? I mean, I'm not into the solar systems, but what I had witnessed that night was not from this planet.
In 1986 was the Japan Airline Flight 1628 incident in Alaska. A group of U.F.O.s flew alongside Japan Airlines Flight 1628 for 50 minutes above northeastern Alaska. The objects were not only huge, but one of them was actually detected by military radar.
It involved an investigation by the FAA. This is an official government investigation of the sighting itself. Bruce Maccabee, retired optical physicist, United States Navy.
The events from that night were captured on tape.
Japan Air 1628 Heavy, military radar advises they are picking up an intermittent primary target behind you. In trail, what say you?
The Boeing 747 cargo jet was on a routine flight from Paris to Tokyo, cruising at 600 miles per hour, at an altitude of 35,000 feet.
It heads towards Anchorage, Alaska to refuel.
Suddenly at 5:11 p.m., Captain Kenji Tarauchi, a pilot with 29 years flight experience, sees three large, fast-moving, unidentified objects 2,000 feet below them. The largest object is described by Captain Tarauchi as resembling a shelled walnut. Captain Tarauchi describes the main craft as being twice the size of an American aircraft carrier.
Bruce Maccabee, retired optical physicist, U.S. Navy, the co-pilot said there was something solid there, like you were seeing an oncoming jet with its lights on, except it wasn't an oncoming jet. The 747 was nothing compared to this big flying saucer. After several minutes of observing the UFO, the pilots realized that the objects are now matching their speed of 600 miles per hour, tracking them. The captain reports that the objects are making moves that are impossible for any man-made aircraft to perform.
Then, without warning, two of the smaller crafts suddenly rise and shoot right in front of the pilot's window.
The objects come so close to the airplane that Captain Tarauchi says, the intense glow make his face feel warm. All of a sudden they appear and they're traveling right in front of the aircraft.
They're sort of wobbling back and forth as they move.
They seem to be only 1,000, maybe 2,000 feet in front of the aircraft and traveling at 600 miles per hour. At that very moment the radio signal to Anchorage goes dead, leaving the aircraft flying blind, a horrifying catastrophe just seconds away, but the UFOs rise, and veer left. Japan Air 1628.
Japan Air 1628 request deviate from object. Request heading 240.
Japan 1628 Heavy, deviations approved as necessary for traffic.
It's quite big. Right in formation.
In his official FAA report, Captain Tarauchi says, we had to get away from that object.
Japan Air 1628, sir, do you still have the traffic?
It disappeared, Japan 1628.
Japan Air 1628 Heavy, I understand that you do not see the traffic any longer?
Affirmative.
Moments later, an urgent message from Elmendorf Air Force Base, the unidentified object now appears on their radar.
Yeah, this 1-2 again, we have confirmed there is a flight size of 2 around your 1550 squawk, one primary return only.
Okay. Is he following him?
It looks like he is, yes.
Okay, stand by.
The phrase flight size of 2 indicates that JAL 1628 has uninvited guests with possible hostile intentions.
Japan Air 1628 Heavy, military radar advises they are picking up intermittent primary target behind you, in trail, what say you?
Immediately after this confirmation, the FAA requests that the Air Force scramble jets.
Do you have anybody to scramble up there? Or do you want to do that?
Well, we're going to talk to your liaison officer about that.
It's starting to concern Japan Airline. He's making A360 now and it's still following.
Yeah, okay. We're calling the military desk on this.
Though the military desk took no action, Japan Flight 1628 was able to land safely at Anchorage Airport at 6:20 p.m. Extensive media coverage from around the world helped make this incident one of the most widely reported UFO cases in history. While the JAL case continues to inspire debate about the nature and intent of the object that tracked the 747, to this day the case remains a mystery.
The Japan Airlines 747 had a saucer going around it. The papers mysteriously disappeared from the FAA office.
In 1989 was the Voronezh UFO sightings in Russia. These sightings not only included eyewitness accounts of UFO crafts but also of mysterious 9-foot-tall beings that exited the craft. This event was not only witnessed by a multitude of adults, but school children as well, and the Russian newspapers even carried the story.
In September of 1989, something happened in the village of Voronezh, 200 miles south of Moscow, that caught the attention of the world press.
For several weeks, strange lights were seen over the city.
Then on September the 27th, it was reported that a spacecraft landed in one of the city's public parks, from which three alien giant figures emerged.
Nothing remotely like this had happened in Voronezh before.
Before coming to America in 1990, Ukrainian journalist Paul Stonehill covered the Voronezh story for the international press.
Paul Stonehill, journalist/author, top Voronezh researchers of anomalous phenomenon, who include scientists, geologists, and also some military people, went to the site immediately thereafter. They were on the site on the 3rd of October studying and collecting specimen. The encounter became a media sensation on national television and in the international press.
Drawings of the landings done by the children that were there capture the event vividly. It attracted the attention of the media around the world because it was effectively endorsed by TASS and Soviet news agency, who up until that time had certainly not given any credence at all to this kind of story.
Paul Stonehill, they had the chance to talk to many eyewitnesses, adults as well as kids, policemen, school teachers, students, scientists who had witnessed similar or even differently shaped UFOs.
The underlying theme was that the giant-like beings exited from the strange-looking craft, did some research throughout Voronezh and were able to get back to their craft and fly away. For once we had a genuine, large number of people all correlating with one another, describing the appearance of these giants.
So, it was not a case of you simply believe a witness or you don't. Here you could not fail to believe them because there were so many of them talking in concert.
Lieutenant G.A. Motveyev, policeman, I was standing not far from the main road at the South Park and I saw this flying object at the approximate height of 200 to 250 meters. Captain C.H. Okony, not, it stayed at the same height and did not move horizontally.
I was very interested by all that because it could not have been any kind of meteorological balloon.
Sketches of the UFOs and robots/beings drawn by some of the witnesses. The top left drawing of the UFO and robot is by 6th grader Roma Torshin and the top right is by Genya Blinov. Credit Hessman/Jacques Vallée. Albert Korchagin, metal worker, there was a squeaking sound, perhaps some drilling tool was operating, like it was boring a hole in the ground. Katusha, the creatures started coming out, they didn't look too much like humans, they were much taller than humans, they did have shoulders, but I didn't see the head, he was huge, really huge, bigger than we are.
He was a mighty figure.
In 1989, Sergei Makarov was one of the school children who was in the Voronezh Park. Sergei Makarov, I remember a crowd that gathered around the place. Everybody was scared, everybody turned tail.
I was absolutely flabbergasted.
Denis Merzenko was also one of the boys in the park on that day in September 1989. Denis Merzenko, I saw some traces there and also a strange man. Awkwardly, he looked like any other man, only he was huge. A moment later he suddenly disappeared. I had no doubt that the UFO and the giants existed because I saw them, but sometimes when I look back it seems sort of like a fairy tale.
Then in 1989-1990 we have the Belgian UFO wave in Belgium. This series of sightings lasted from 1989 into the 90s, with a massive amount of eyewitness accounts on the very first night. The unknown objects were tracked on radar by the Belgian Air Force and described as black triangles with bright lights that would change color. The Belgian Air Force still offers no explanation for the objects, even though photographic evidence exists.
The Belgian UFO sightings were in the late 1980s and continued into the 1990s. We've all heard of the Bermuda Triangle, a mysterious area over the Atlantic Ocean where ships and planes have been said to simply disappear. Well, welcome to the Belgian Triangle, where a huge object suddenly appeared in the sky. Belgium is such a small little country, and you can imagine that in this small little country hundreds of people seeing this enormous large triangular object. Filmmaker James Fox has studied UFO sightings for many years. James Fox. There was an extremely large triangular-shaped craft that could maneuver silently in the night sky, very slow, very low. The Belgian craft was witnessed by hundreds of people, including police officers. With something that large hanging over them, the Belgians didn't waffle. They sent in military jets. James Fox. They scrambled the F-16 jets. They locked the radar on it. It showed up triangular on their radar. James Fox. But every time the F-16 jets would close in on it, the object would completely outperform them and was gone. They couldn't get close to it. Phil Imbrigno. The object dropped from 10,000 feet to 500 feet in a few seconds. Wow. That's not just super technology, that's Star Trek. Perhaps the answer lies in this photo. James Fox. There was a pretty impressive photograph taken of the craft that was analyzed, and you can see the structure in between the lights. Phil Imbrigno. The picture that was made available to the media was enhanced by photographic computer techniques, but it was basically what the witness saw and what the witness described. Yes, it was probably one of the better UFO pictures that show structure. So, just what was that giant triangle? Investigator Phil Imbrigno decided to trek on over to Belgium to find out for himself. Phil Imbrigno. I talked to the witnesses who saw the object that night. I can tell you that they were telling the truth from my point of view, and once again we see over the years that UFOs are becoming less and less shy and are showing themselves to more and more individuals.
In 1990 we had the Montreal UFO in Canada. This is when more than 40 witnesses, including police, observed a UFO above downtown Montreal for more than 3 hours. In 1991 we had Space Shuttle Discovery incident, and a video taken during mission STS-48 shows a flash of light and several objects that appear to be flying in an artificial or controlled fashion. NASA explained the objects as ice particles reacting to engine jets. However, researchers analyzed the movement of the objects and found 5 arguments that the footage could not depict ice particles. Also, the flash of light that preceded the abrupt change in the course of the objects was analyzed, and it was concluded that the exhaust plume from one of the shuttle's reaction control system rockets could not have produced the flash of light. The objects appeared to have a definite structure consisting of 3 lobes arranged in a triangular pattern. Then in 1993 we have the Kelly-Cahill incident in Australia, east of Melbourne's Dandenong foothills. Kelly-Cahill and 5 others observed a flying saucer that appeared shortly after midnight. They were also confronted by tall, slim, black aliens with glowing red eyes.
Kelly-Cahill was a mother and housewife with no interest in spaceships or aliens. But now she's using technology to reconstruct images of her own encounter.
It does give the idea of the lights there, but you know, the brightness of the lights gives the good impression, but the color doesn't seem quite right.
Kelly's account starts in August 1993.
My husband and I were driving up to my girlfriend's place in Mombok, which is Dandenong Mountains. We were driving Belgrave-Hellam Road and it was just on dusk. I saw what I thought was round orange lights in the field. It just looked unusual to me.
Later that night, while retracing their route home, Kelly noticed something unusual.
About a kilometer or so in front of us, about twice the height of the treetops, we could see this object, which at first, I thought was a blimp. It had the shape of a blimp, but it was light. As we got closer to it, the light seemed to separate, and it was sort of this row of round lights, and they were orange. It appeared like there were silhouettes standing in these round orange lights, like people, but you could only see the black outline. I just said to my husband, "Look, there's people in there." And the minute I said that, it shot off to the left of us, and within 1 or 2 seconds it was gone completely. About a kilometer or two farther down the road, as we kept driving, I came across, at least what I thought was a screen or wall of light across the road, and my heart started racing and the adrenaline was sort of pumping through my body, and I'm thinking, we just saw this back down the way, we are in for, you know, a close encounter. Then the next instant, nothing. I seem to have covered a fair distance that I don't remember covering. There might have been possibly close to a kilometer that I don't remember actually traveling. There was no light, there was nothing blocking the road.
Kelly says it wasn't until weeks later that she remembered actually getting out of the car that night.
Then I saw that there was another car that had pulled up 100 meters down the road. Then I walked around the front of the car to where my husband was standing on the other side, and we started walking across the road together. As we were walking across the road, I looked down and saw that the other people were getting out of the car and starting to walk as well. So, I was quite happy that there were other people there who were seeing the same things we were, and we walked along there to where the fence is. Right out in front of us is this huge craft. I was totally awestruck, you know, it was science fiction coming to life. There wasn't any fear then, there was just total awe. We stood here, side by side, my husband and I, for about 30 to 45 seconds. Then this tall dark being just appeared in front of the craft, and he was followed by about another 7 or 8 that appeared straight behind him. I felt this energy go through me. It was unlike nothing I've ever experienced before in my life. It was like some sort of low-level frequency that came in waves, but it was so dense that I could physically feel it going through my body, and that feeling absolutely terrified me. It was like, I can't even explain the horror that I felt, just feeling this, and I began screaming. The minute I did, the eyes on these things lit up and they came charging across the field. Halfway across they split up into two groups, some of them headed off down there and the rest came directly towards us. I felt this blow to my stomach, and the next thing you know I'm somewhere back here on the grass. It literally lifted me off my feet. I thought I was gonna die. I thought if I don't get up not, I'm gonna pass out and I'm gonna die. I'm never gonna come back to consciousness, so, you know, I pulled myself up into a sitting position, and when I sat up I couldn't see anything, and it was like there was just black in front of my eyes.
Kelly's not the only one who saw these images that night. For the first time ever, independent witnesses have given the same account of a close encounter. Even though Kelly has never met Jane, Glenda, and Bill from the other car she saw, she has seen the sketches they drew for UFO researchers.
They've drawn the same circles of light around the top of the craft, with these blue lines coming down ending in a semicircle on the ground. They've also drawn a tripod underneath, which is something I didn't see that night. It becomes very clear then that we were all looking at the same thing, and it was not your average saucer-shaped craft. Basically, the second party were able to draw sketches of the beings very similar to the ones that I had, and they're not your usual little gray things that you see in media propaganda. I found a small red-colored equilateral triangle underneath my navel, which in reality provided only a minor curiosity at the time. It was oddly geometric, and I did wonder how something like that could get on me that looked like a burn, without me feeling it.
At UFO conferences, where Kelly is now a keynote speaker, she added strength to her own story by showing photographs of the physical marks left on one of the other women.
We were all left with triangular marks under our navels, but the marks that were actually photographed, the first one came from Glenda, which is a series of 3 small red dots along the inner thigh, and both Jane and Glenda were marked with these dots. I wasn't, and Glenda had a ligature mark around her ankle along with severe bruising. It looked like she'd been strapped down to something.
UFO researchers have also reported finding physical traces at the site where all witnesses said the encounter happened, particularly in respect to where the craft landed.
Inside that semicircle was a triangular formation of 3 points about meters apart, which correspond with a tripod that was drawn underneath the girl's craft.
To this day, Kelly still doesn't know exactly what happened to her that night. Her most vivid memory is the fear that she felt.
I think a lot of people might have experienced the fear in a nightmare where you're being chased or something like that. And it's a terror that you feel that sometimes can wake you up or whatever, but it's absolutely horrifying when you're dreaming it, and that's exactly what I was feeling while I was totally awake. that sort of terror and actually having to feel it when you're conscious and physically awake and feel it as a reality is like a living nightmare. It's like a nightmare come to life.
In 1994 was the Meng Zhaogo incident in China. Meng Zhaogo claimed to have been abducted and forced to have intercourse with a 10-foot-tall, 6-fingered, female alien with braided leg fur. 15. In 1996 we have the Varginha UFO incident in Brazil. This is the account where not only were multiple sightings made of a UFO but there was an alleged capture of aliens.
AJ Givard, founder and editor of the Brazilian UFO magazine, the Varginha case is probably the best, well-documented case we have in Brazil and probably in the world. You know, over 80 witnesses came forward, first-hand witnesses came forward during the first weeks and they are still coming after it happened. During all these years we still keep getting witnesses that tell us pieces of the big story that we know comprises the capture of at least two alien creatures in the city of Varginha. We know for a fact, because we have it all documented, plus the witnesses have confirmed and cross-confirmed that one alien was captured in the morning of that day, which was a Saturday about 10:30 a.m. by the fire department and some personnel from the army. Another creature was seen on the same day but middle of the afternoon by three girls. It was them who called the attention of the entire city to the fact that there were strange creatures being seen, because one was seen being captured in the morning. It didn't draw too much attention, but in the afternoon, when the girls saw another creature, then they spread the word to everybody, "We saw the devil," that's what they thought they saw. That night, of the Saturday, January 20th, 1996, that second creature, probably the same one seen by the girls, was also captured by a police car, actually a military police car with two policemen inside. The one who was sitting in the passenger seat was Marco de Chias, and he was lucky enough to be the one who spotted the creature and grabbed it with his bare arms, bare hands, got back to the car, put the creature on his lap and took it hostage. 25 days after that he died on February 15th of some bacteria attacks, proving that his immune deficiency system was absolutely destroyed, and army personnel kept it all secret for lots of time, until the UFO researchers started protesting along with the press and created so much pressure that eventually information was released.
In 1996 we had the Space Shuttle Columbia incident. Another video has surfaced, this time taken during mission STS-80 of Space Shuttle Columbia while in orbit. It was analyzed and showed different unusual phenomena, including a number of fast-moving objects near the shuttle that appear as bright streaks, and two slow-moving circular objects. One comes into view from the left and then remains stationary, while the other one appears out of thin air and moves off to the right. Then in 1997 we have the Phoenix Lights incident in Arizona, where lights of varying descriptions, most notably a V-shaped pattern, were seen by thousands of people for about 3 hours, in a space of about 300 miles, from the Nevada line, through Phoenix, to the edge of Tucson.
The case of the Phoenix Lights began on an evening in March of 1997. Late breaking, you're watching News 15 at 10. Do these lights belong to visitors from outer space? Hundreds of people from across the valley think it's a distinct possibility. Good evening, I'm Mark Bailey. And I'm Robin Sewell, thanks for joining us. We start our broadcast tonight with those strange dots of light that were the talk of the town. As reported, multiple UFOs were sighted throughout the Phoenix Basin. Numerous eyewitnesses were already outside looking up into the night sky, hoping to catch a glimpse of the Hale-Bopp comet. Michael Tanner is part of a team of investigators received roughly 800 reports of eyewitnesses regarding the Phoenix incident. Michael Tanner, UFO investigator, between 8:15 and 8:45 we had enormous crafts at varying altitudes come right through the center of the Valley of Phoenix, led by a formation of orbs that were clearly visible through most of the state. Here are some of the eyewitness reports. It passed right in front of us, right above eye's length. My estimate of the size of the craft from the nose as it passed us where we lived to the end of the wing as it passed in front of us was over 5,000 feet long. It's coming across the sky, and as it's moving it's blocking and unblocking the stars. There is actually a shape. It was actually five lights that were in a V, one in front and two on each side, and it was a perfect triangle. The object we saw, if we opened up a newspaper you could not block out the object that we saw. People say, you know, you saw a B-2 bomber. My response is we could land all 40 of our B-2 bombers on the wing of that craft. He says, you're not gonna believe what I saw. And I said, yes, I would. That's all that's been on the news all night long, is this craft. Reporter, explanations have been tossed about, that they were flares, that they were planes flying in formation. Well, Mark and Robin, we checked with the FAA today and we checked with Sky Harbor and we checked with Luke Air Force Base, and there's been no official explanation of those strange, bright lights last night. Truck driver Bill Greiner was driving south on I-17 towards Luke Air Force Base. He witnessed several fighter jets scramble to intercept two UFOs directly overhead. Bill Greiner, I pulled my truck alongside the west silos which faces Luke Air Force Base. It was like right there and I was here unloading. Everything was completely quiet, it was really eerie. There was one right over the base and then there was another one out toward Wickenburg and these things were just hovering. They were huge orbs, but they didn't make no sound or nothing, they were just hovering right there over the base. Suddenly, I heard a lot of roaring coming out of Luke Air Force Base and here come these two fighters coming out and they must have had the burners on cause there were these huge flames coming out of the back of these things. They ripped right around the back of me and shot right towards those things. Then they disappeared on them and they were just gone. Reporter, the military says the lights over Arizona last night were flares, but the people who saw the lights say that they couldn't have been flares. In central Phoenix, in what is known as the Sunny Slope area, the Lay family was coming home in the early evening to watch for the Hale-Bopp comet when they witnessed a very large craft fly directly over their house. The Lay family's account of the incident, when the craft went over, I really focused on the light. The tip of the craft was right out in the street and the arm is going by, and the end of the arm is at least to that mountain over there. It was 600-700 feet away with these huge lights set inside of it. I looked inside and it's wavy, like when you look down the street on a hot day in Phoenix above the streets, and it's wavy and you see everything kind of distorted, and that's what it looked like up inside the middle of the craft. And it just skimmed by and didn't make a sound, not even a sound. Further eyewitness testimony came from Stacy Rhodes and her daughter Emily, who both saw a giant craft fly over their car. Stacy Rhodes, it was gunmetal black, it wasn't shiny, it wasn't invisible, it was more of a dull bluish black color. Emily Rhodes, and we both just stayed there and looked at it for a couple minutes and it was completely silent. Mike Fortson spotted the same craft from his backyard in Chandler, a suburb of Phoenix. Mike Fortson, when you're looking to the north towards Phoenix proper, the lights of the city of Phoenix, Tempe, and Scottsdale, and all these, will form a gray background, and this was a black object coming through a gray background. We had no trouble at all seeing this vehicle. We knew it wasn't ours because it was just too doggone big. As a matter of fact, profoundly massive is a better way to describe it. We don't really have words in our language to describe something that large, it was huge. Councilwoman Frances Barwood was approached by a reporter who complained about the lack of response from local government regarding the sightings. Frances Emma Barwood, Councilwoman, read, what this reporter said was that they had gone to every level of government, including the city of Phoenix, and nobody would talk to them, that this object went from north of Prescott and called in all the way down to Tucson and then was also seen in Wickenburg, and nobody would give them any answer. They were either told that they were not going to talk about it at all, or that there was nothing. That nothing happened. Responding to mounting pressure from his constituents, Governor Fife Symington held a press conference. Oh, I'm gonna order a full investigation into this through DPS, and we are gonna make all the necessary inquiries, and we are gonna get to the bottom of it. We are gonna find out if it was a UFO. Later that day, Governor Symington held an unscheduled live press conference to announce that they had discovered the source behind the Phoenix lights. And now I'll ask Officer Stein and his officers to escort the accused into the room so that we all may look at the guilty party, and this just goes to show that you guys are entirely too serious. Geraldine Greiner, I think everyone pretty much laughed at it. I thought that it was really disgusting, it was dismissing everything people had seen and said. Just like, we're all Looney Tunes. I just thought that was a really improper attitude for somebody in his position. Nobody in state, local, or federal, military, nobody wanted to talk about it. They didn't want to interview witnesses. They said it didn't happen. They said it didn't concern them. There was one councilwoman, Frances Barwood, she's the only one who spoke up and said, why don't we investigate? And then when it came time for her election, she lost. Then everyone, in the press, the media, she was trashed really bad.
Then we have a UFO incident in 1997 over the Mexico City skyline UFO. An amateur with a digital camera captured footage of a UFO passing behind and above several buildings.
UPN reports. Now for the first time in its entirety, you are seeing the Mexico City saucer just as we first saw it. We haven't enhanced or manipulated the footage, we haven't removed anything. Translation is being withheld because of the nature of the language used. Let's just say the shooter and his friend are very excited. In order to get to the bottom of this incredible flying saucer footage, we went to the exact location where the saucer had supposedly been hovering. We were looking for answers, for eyewitnesses, anyone who may have had a part in the mysterious sighting on that day. Anyone, that is, who would be willing to talk about it. Eyewitness to event, and at last I found the place. This is real, the place exists, the buildings, and then I found not one witness but 12 witnesses. Some of them were just under the object, others who saw it far away. Others did not see the object but remember that their animals went absolutely crazy that same day. Interviewer: You presented this video at first without knowing where it was, why? Because you wanted to flush people out. You wanted people to come out and say, yeah, I know where this is. Eyewitness: Exactly, and it happened just one day after. It worked, and for me it was very important because I say I found the place, and it physically existed. This was not a photographic trick. Another eyewitness to the August 6, 1997 saucer was 13-year-old Cassandra. Interviewer: Can you show me where you were standing when you saw it? Cassandra: It was in the middle of those two buildings. I was scared. Was it wobbling, floating? Cassandra: At first it was still, it was wobbling, but then when it got balance it shot out toward the corner of the building, and then it disappeared. As the interview progressed, Cassandra told us that the object had been spinning, and that she thought she saw windows. She also revealed that right after the sighting she told her father about the UFO, but he had not believed her. Eyewitness: We have found 12 witnesses. If we want to look for more, we could find more. We continued to look. We questioned those familiar with the area where the saucer had apparently been taped. We looked from every possible point of view. We heard that there had been a sighting about a mile north in the wealthy suburb of Bosques Los Lomas. There we met Annie Lask, a young woman who had been on the roof of her house on August 6th, and she told us that the saucer in the video had hovered directly over her. Interviewer: And how high above you was it? Annie Lask: Like 20 meters. The outer rim was spinning really fast and hissing. When I realized that there was this weird thing on top of my head, I tried to take a picture. I turned up and it wasn't there. But there was like this mist, like a purple mist or maybe haze. After the saucer left her standing in a purple staticky haze, Annie Lask does not remember getting down from the roof. Annie Lask: Since that day, I have constant headaches like every day. Really strong headaches, my eyes burn so bad. They still do. Annie Lask: Yes. Since that day. Allison Holloway interviewed David Froning, who is a propulsion engineer and 30-year veteran of McDonnell Douglas. Allison Holloway: What's your best guess of what this is? David Froning: I think it's an intelligently controlled craft. It looks like it's being propelled by what we call field propulsion. A propulsion, or mode of propulsion that we ourselves have not fully developed yet. What if the pilots of this ship realized when the person shooting the video had them locked on, holy smokes, someone can see us now, and they revved up their engines and got out of there?
And in 1998 we have the Somerset incident in the UK. An amazing sighting of a UFO was videotaped in Somerset with amazing results.
In the southwest of England, just outside Somerset, there was another sighting. It was captured on videotape. Rod Dickinson: Got it, yeah, I think it's coming this way. Yeah, I can see it. Amazing. David Kingston: The UFO that you saw originally was spotted approximately about 200 yards to the left of the aerial mast, and I suppose it was probably about 500 feet up. It was very low in the sky. David Kingston: And this is a British communications tower? Rod Dickinson: This is a radio communications tower. They got three military masts on there and it sends out. One is navigational signal which is used for aircraft, the other two arrows are near the top, we're not sure, but there is a pulsed frequency that comes from them. David Kingston: The actual UFO from the time it was first seen by Rod Dickinson, who did the filming,
it lasted approximately 12 minutes. So, it was quite a long period of time for a daylight sighting to occur.
We took this tape to be analyzed by Lucasfilm's Special Effects Division Industrial Light and Magic in San Rafael, California.
Here we met with Bill George, an Academy Award-winning special effects supervisor. Over the last 20 years, his special effects have been featured in films like Star Wars: The Phantom Menace. He analyzed this film to determine its authenticity.
Bill George, there are several things that I see when the footage is running that tells me this was actually there when this was filmed. First of all, it's the shake, the shake.
If you were to give me a background plate of just the sky and say, we want you to take this image of a flying saucer and match it in, that's something that's technically very difficult to do, because you have to match, putting the two elements together, you would have to match the shake.
Now certainly we have computers that can track that, but this is just all over the map.
A couple other cues that tell me this is actually there when it was being filmed was that it is going in and out of focus with the background because the camera is trying to compensate and trying to focus, probably some sort of autofocus. So, the background is going in and out of focus along with the object. There are these dark things flying through the frame, and if someone was to have put those in there, they would have to composite it in there behind the birds. It would be a technical problem.
In 2000 we have Southern Illinois UFO. Between 4 o'clock and 7 a.m., 6 people, including police officers, observed a large, triangular object a few hundred feet over St. Clair County in Illinois. The object glided silently and slowly to the southwest over several small towns before vanishing near the town of Dupo. The object, studded with several bright lights, was as tall as a two-story house and as long as a football field, as this actual 911 distress call reveals.
At the regional 911 center located in Belleville, all conversations are recorded. This tape begins with a radio dispatch from an operator, 911 operator Tina Joaquin.
We just received a call from Highland PD in reference to a truck driver who just stopped in and said there was a flying object in the area of Lebanon. It was like a two-story house, it had white lights and red blinking lights, and it was last seen southwest over Lebanon. Officer, could you check the area?
An officer on patrol in the city of Lebanon, Illinois, responded to the dispatcher's query.
Did they say if the truck driver was DUI or anything?
She said he was serious.
Just a quick question. If I happen to find it, what am I supposed to do with it?
After searching for 2 minutes, the officer radioed the dispatcher.
Be advised, there's a very bright, white light east of town, and it keeps changing colors. I'll go over there and see maybe if it's an aircraft. It doesn't look like an aircraft, though.
That's affirmative. It's not the moon, and it's not a star.
If you would you contact Scott Air Force Base and see if they have anything flying in this area, please?
Well, whether it's a plane or not, it's heading westbound now. Matter of fact, if Shiloh officer looks up, they can probably see it by now.
6 miles southwest, a call came from another police officer, this time in Shiloh, Illinois.
2550, I see something, but I don't know what the heck it is.
13 miles southwest in Milstead, another police witness reports a similar sighting.
CENTCOM 6004.
Go ahead.
I've got that object in sight also.
Are you serious? Does it look like a... What does it look like to you?
It's kind of V-shaped.
Really?
A moment later, a fourth police witness in Dupo, Illinois, contacted the dispatcher.
When I first saw it with the open eye, you could see the different colors. Now it just appears to be white.
Is it very large?
It's hard to tell. It's pretty far off in the distance. This object was above me about 500 feet. It was huge.
There were no more calls to the dispatcher. Whatever it was, if indeed there was anything, vanished into the night skies over Illinois, but police are trained to be reliable observers, and 4 different officers from 4 different departments all reported seeing something that they could not explain.